Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
So Liverpool leading Spartak Moscow by 5-0. A nice little warm-up for the Merseyside derby. Big Sam's not even going to watch Everton play tomorrow night.
Yeah. What did you say earlier on? Can't be arsed.
Can't be arsed itis.
Yeah. Harsh. Considering he's got a medical appointment, so hopefully Big Sam's okay. But let's be fair. I think we all expected Everton not to bring a strong squad or travel with a strong squad, given the game that they've got on this weekend.
Philippe Coutinho in the last week or so, couple of weeks, really seems to have stepped up to another gear again. Yeah. Which, like tonight, Mo Salah hasn't scored. Doesn't need to score. Didn't at the weekend either. That front four is as good as it gets.
Yeah, it is. And we've spoken about it all season, haven't we? It's the other end that defensively where Liverpool have been struggling. And you can't get away from the fact is, I think with Liverpool, yes, great going forward. But and you'll point to the record and you're the big stat man when you'll say Liverpool have kept so many clean sheets. But you watch them sometimes and you just feel it's around the corner when it's going to happen again. That's the only thing. That's the thing that worries you when you watch them. But overall, yes, they are just superb going forward. Amazing.
Graham Souness was saying earlier that he doesn't think it's necessarily a structural problem at the back, the way they're set up, that it is just individual errors that are costing them time and time again.
Concentration.
As well. Is there not something that Klopp can do, though, with the tactics of the side, with the structure of the defence, that can make it easier for them to concentrate? Is it that they spend so much time thinking of attacking that they don't have enough time to concentrate on their main role?
I think there's an element of that. I think when you watch them, it's just the constant thread. You know, they got 3 and 4 up tonight and the game's over, yes. But it's the constant array of players just piling forward at every opportunity. And that's that's how they're being coached. It's what Klopp wants. He wants entertaining, attacking football. But I just feel as though there has to come a time in a game where you've, particularly if a game's tight and you're playing against really top-class opposition. I know with the games that Liverpool have got coming up as well, some of those bigger ones, you would like them just to see spells in games through rather than just continuously send bodies forward. Try and sit in. But it's not his style. It's entertaining. We spoke about the start of the season. They will entertain us all year. But will it be good enough to seriously compete and challenge for the trophies? Perhaps maybe one of the cup competitions, but that'd be about it with them.
When you think back in your career and maybe individual mistakes that you made, not that there could have been many.
Few and far between, Nathan, as you know.
What was the main reason? Was it that the setup in the side wasn't right? Was it concentration issues? Was it that the player in front of you, a lack of understanding?
Yeah, it's fair to say. I think individual errors are always going to happen. They're going to happen on the pitch. I think it's what makes the game exciting. The way Liverpool play, Liverpool are exciting to watch, whether or not you're a supporter or not. They're exciting because you kind of expect them at times to make mistakes defensively. I think if you're asking me the direct question about myself, it probably would have been perhaps lapses in concentration. Take your eye off the ball.
Would you have had more lapses in concentration under certain managers? Would you have had many lapses of concentration under Trapattoni?
No, probably not. I think as well,
compared to when Stan was in charge.
No, but I would say maybe under Trapattoni as well. He was the first one that started to play me left back. So when you start to play left back, you know the role that you're playing in the side. It's very, very, it's very structured. It's very, very rigid how you play, and I wasn't necessarily suited to that position. So you kind of. So all I was doing maybe within that, I was just trying to play the role, just stay in your position, hold your ground. He wanted me to support from behind as well, whether that was Stephen Hunt, Aidan McGee, Damien Duff that was playing in front of me. He didn't necessarily want me bombing on beyond them. He wanted me to play a supporting role, which it probably suited me given the fact that I was very new to it and I was kind of learning the more I played. The older I got, obviously you're slowing down, you're not as quick or as dynamic as you probably were anyway. So you kind of, it does suit you, I think, to an extent that you're just actually playing that role. Yeah, so I think in general, the mistake, I mean, the one that sticks in my head is probably Bulgaria away, I would have thought. That was my mistake that I made in allowed them to equalise, really. Sean St. Ledger and myself just got caught up in both going for the ball.
Bulgaria
both
away.
Shouted. And then none of us went for it in the end, and it just allowed it to get through the middle of us. So, but anyway, that was maybe the one standout one that was in my head there, I suppose, as well. And that was perhaps a lapse in concentration, yeah.
Leon Best playing that game?
No, Caleb Fallon actually played in that game. Caleb Fallon played really well, actually. Played really well. Richard Dunn scored early for us, and we ended up conceding. And that's the sort of thing when you look back on, you think they cost you maybe top spot against Italy in that qualification campaign, yeah. Because I think we drew against them at home. I scored an own goal at home.
I think you did.
Yeah. That was just something I couldn't avoid. It just kind of hit me, do you know, one of those. But I was probably more gutted about the mistake over there in Bulgaria.
My main memory of the trip to Sofia was that there was a media game organised for the morning of the match, and there was talk at the time, now maybe it was late the night before, there was talk at the time that Hristo Stoichkov was going to be playing
really?
In this media match. Unfortunately, it didn't stop me from making a good night of it and not getting up in time for the match.
Yes, so you made an arse of yourself.
Yes.
Who was playing in the game?
I don't know if Hristo Stoichkov. There was definitely a couple of lads on the Bulgarian side that played in 94.
Who was playing for us?
Whoever got out of bed early. The elder lads.
Yeah, sometimes you do let yourself down on those trips, Nathan. Yeah,
yeah,
you do.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, you do.
We have company, so please be nice. Ryan Lester is with us. Evening, Ryan.
Good evening, gents.
Ryan is the Wolves pundit for the Birmingham Mail. We want to talk about Wolves because, well, I think next season we're going to be talking a lot about Wolves because it looks as though they are heading for promotion from the Championship. They're currently the Championship leaders, and everything we've seen so far suggests that they're going to go on and they're going to win that league. It's such an interesting story with the takeover that has taken place, with George Mendes' influence, with the players they've been able to bring to a second-tier team. You might try and break it down for us, Ryan, in terms of when this takeover happened and how quickly it became clear that this was going to be a major change in the way Wolves was run and in the terms of the ambitions that they should have.
Well, the owners are in their second year in charge now, and I think we've only really seen this in terms of pre-season in year two, because they were trying to push, well, as far as I'm led to believe, they were trying to push for the takeover last summer, but it only happened really late on, close to the season. So Kenny Jackett was left in limbo. We missed out on the Spain manager who was lined up via Mendes. We brought in Walter Zenger. We were chasing them in the transfer window. So last year was a bit hit and miss. A couple of managers wasn't particularly pretty under Paul Lambert. But this pre-season, we brought in this Champions League manager, managed at Porto, big pedigree. Some of the players we brought in, as you mentioned, we brought in Ruben Neves. But from day one, he's played 3-4-3, and the football has been something like we have never seen at Wolves, certainly not in my lifetime.
So the club's owners, the Fosun conglomerate, a Chinese group of investors who bought it from Steve Morgan, they own the club through a British Virgin Islands holding company, paid $21 million immediately in taking over. They've spent $17 million since on players. So $30 million basically to get them the club, returning the investment that Morgan had made when he bought it from Jack Hayward probably a decade or so ago. Was it clear from the outset that George Mendes was going to be very influential in the deal?
I think that was the talk from the start, yeah. And, I mean, as soon as Ivan Cavalera was the big summer sign last year, one of Mendes' clients. And particularly this season, we've seen lots of players. I mean, there's a lot of players in that squad now that have gone through him. The likes of Jota. I mean, we signed Costa last season. He has got a big influence. And there seems to be a lot of negativity about that because it's all coming through one agent. But speak to any Wolves fan at the moment, you won't see very many sad faces in that area.
Huh. I was going to say that to him, actually. It's almost as if do the fans actually care that there is perhaps maybe a slight scrutiny on the way that they're handling the transfer dealings? Suppose they don't, the way that you've said, with it being the best football that you've ever seen at the club.
I don't think so at all, no. I think there was... it was quite advertised at the start of the season. There was a lot of stick from national press, local press, fellow opposing fans, that there was not an air of jealousy, but like, oh, you're selling your soul, you're doing this, you're doing that. But fans now, we're not particularly bothered. It's great football. And I can honestly say, since the Steve Ball days, I don't think the fans have ever been this close to the football club, and I can honestly say that with my hand on heart. The place is absolutely buzzing at the moment.
We really should look at the quality of the players that they have managed to bring in thanks to that Mendes connection. Like you mentioned Ruben Neves there, who was playing for Porto in the Champions League when he was just 17. He's only 20 now. He's a player already who's got four caps for the Portuguese international side. You mentioned as well the striker Diego Iota, who's technically with Atletico Madrid, though he's never played for them. He was at Porto last season, made a real impression there. These are players that would comfortably fit in the Premier League, you would expect.
I would absolutely say so. Wolves, I mean, anyone that would stand me boring them listening, saying how eventually I'd love beautiful football at Wolves. I mean, it's our dreams come true for any purist. We've been used to like wingers crossing and knockdown and finishing, but this has been totally purist football from start to finish. Like you said, Neves, Iota, Cavalero, Willy Bolly, who's been massively underrated, currently on loan from Porto as well. John Ruddy, free transfer. A lot of these guys belong in the Premier League and continue this way, and I think that'll be happening.
It is totally understandable why the Wolves supporters aren't asking a huge amount of questions. It's been such a barren spell for one of the historically great English clubs, one of the founder members of the English League, and they want to get back to the big time in the Premier League, and they want to maybe win some silverware over the next 4 or 5 years. But for those covering the club, are people constantly digging into this story? Are people looking to make sure that everything is above board, that we're not sitting here in 5 years' time and looking back and asking how they were allowed to get away with this, how they were allowed to have such control, how one agent was allowed to have such an influence at a club?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it's been made very clear that Fossen own a small part of Jorge Mendes' company. It was all made above board. They were like, this is what's happening. And he's an advisor to the club. And you know what? We are signing a lot of players under his guidance. It's all been sanctioned by the FA. So if we're going above board and it's ticking all the boxes, I've got absolutely no problem. Players have got to come to agents somewhere. If they're just coming through one, and it just so happens to we have got Jorge Mendes giving us that tap of incredible young Portuguese talent, absolutely no problems from me.
Is it not,
or
so,
many others.
Do you not feel there's a conflict of interest here, though?
Not particularly, no. But like I said, players have got to come from one agent somewhere. And agents are very... there's a lot of wealthy and rich agents. If they're coming through one person and all the talent's coming to us, I've absolutely no problem at all. If it's ticking all the boxes and legally going through the football ways is okay, I've got no problem at all.
I'd imagine a lot of Wolves supporters are going on to the website of Jesufite, the company that Jorge Mendes runs, and looks at his list of clients, and you might look at the top of the list and look at Cristiano Ronaldo and Diego Costa and Angel Di Maria and think, alright, maybe we can't get those players. But you're probably not going down too far if they do get promoted to the Premier League, where you could be looking at players like Eliquim Mangala, that they have a way now of being able to, I guess, manipulate their wages in certain ways with loan moves, that actually, like, the quality of the Wolves side that's getting promoted this season is exceptional compared to the rest of the Championship. But really, the sky's the limit in terms of the potential loan moves that could come next year, the potential signings that could arrive at the club.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, like I said, there is the doubt over Mendes, but when you're working alongside someone who has the keys to the door to the Portuguese talent pool at the moment, it can only be a good thing. I mean, we're tapping into the butt at the moment. Neves, he's 20. Iota's 21. Cavalero, 24. Costa's 24. We're signing young players as well. So in the future, if they do move on, Wolves are still going to make a lot of money on these players. So it's a big opportunity for Wolverhampton Wanderers, and very exciting.
I do wonder, is that where the issue could arise, though, over the coming years? So you mentioned Ruben Neves, 20. If he goes next year, gets promoted with Wolves and has an exceptional season in the Premier League, and he moves on for 30, 35 million pounds, or maybe he doesn't move on to that. Maybe he goes to another club where Jorge Mendes has strong links, that maybe that influx of cash that you would expect for a squad of that quality, maybe it doesn't all go to the right places.
No, and there's a strong possibility of saying that the triangles within the Mendes sort of clubs going round and round. But as one of you mentioned earlier on, as Wolves fans, we've had a couple of good promotions over the last 20, 25 years since I've been watching the club. But overall, I mean, we've suffered a double relegation from the Premier League, watching desperate football. If it's what it takes at the moment and people disapprove, but to get us promoted, I'm more than happy for us to be a middleman. If it comes to that, then so be it.
one of the survivors from, really probably the Mick McCarthy era, and I dare say Mick is looking on and wondering, how did I miss the boat on this one yet again, is Matt Doherty, who we probably would have seen as a left-back once upon a time, but is now developed into a marauding right-winger.
Well, naturally, that was his position, wasn't it, anyway? Mm. But he got into the team and got himself stable in the team as a left-back, but now he's certainly developed, hasn't he?
Yeah, Matt's been fantastic. And I mean, there's a lot of Wolves fans, including myself, thinking he's been overdue an international call-up for a long time. And there's a guy that's been... he's been a solid right-back, but his strength was getting forward. So playing right wing-back, absolutely, he's got an incredible engine. He's up and down all day. I mean, he gets goals, he gets assists. He's a fantastic footballer. I mean, he's controlled aggression. He's a very good footballer. And I think probably in terms of the guidance of the manager, who we've not really mentioned much so far, he's probably, alongside Cody, Wolves' most improved player this year.
Yeah, what has he brought to the side? You mentioned there about this style of player, then Nuno Espirito Santos. What's he brought to the club? Not just on the pitch, but you say the supporters have never been as close to the team. So that, by and large, has got to be in some way the manager's doing.
Absolutely. I think you get honesty with him. I don't think any manager can be completely honest. He never tells you, oh, we're brilliant. There's always room for improvement. He's keeping the fans and the players level-headed. He tells us he wants to play good football, and that's the only way he's going to play. He wants to entertain us, and he wants to win trophies. Any manager could say that, but he's level-headed. You know what I mean? It's one game at a time. We want to play good football. There's always room for improvement. And it's just, I don't know if you've ever seen any of these interviews. He's very calm. He doesn't particularly do much with the media. But he's one of those characters, when he speaks, you listen. And it's just like, you could listen to, well, as a fan, you could listen to his interviews all day, because he's just like, I feel very lucky that this man's in control of our football team at the moment.
I'm talking as if it's a guarantee that Wolves are going to be playing in the Premier League next season. But from watching them this year, they do look as though they're getting better and better, that they're starting to click, and that they are cut above everybody else in the Championship. Is that the sense around Wolves, that really anything less than winning the Championship now would be a letdown?
I think anything less than promotion would be disappointment now in terms of top two, because, I mean, Kevin would know more about this than me, but in the early 2000s, Wolves had a big slip up to West Brom. So we know, until the fat lady's singing, nothing is over at all. But early season, we had Cardiff come to Wolves. They did a job on us. They were very physical. But we've had a few physical games since then, like at home to Preston. And Wolves have learned. The manager's learning. The players are toughening up. And these boys, they are very skillful, but they're here for a fight as well. I mean, a lot of players, you could say Diogo Jota on Monday night, that tackle on him was absolutely terrible. But he got up and it inspired him to move on. And the whole team is growing into the Championship. So I'm very confident of a top two finish, yes.
Ryan, thanks a lot for taking the call. Best of luck with the rest of the season.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Ryan Lester there, who is the Wolves pundit for the Birmingham Mail. 7-0 now to Liverpool. The second 7-0 for Liverpool in this group stage. 23 goals they've scored, most ever by an English club. Is this Mo Salah?
Yeah, you said it earlier on, didn't you? Mo Salah's not even scored yet. He's managed to get in on the act. Lovely goal, actually, it was for Sadio Mane when I think he made it 6. But again, most Liverpool's goals, similar sort of fashion. It's more, it was a clip over the Spartak right back, little knock back across goal. Steady, composed himself from Mo Salah, put it onto his right foot and finished well. So 7-0 Liverpool, yeah, it's some result.
Does Mo Salah look a little bit heavy?
Is that you saying that? You're saying...
Listen, I'm not going you're to criticise. I'm not. Maybe he's just built himself up quite a bit.
But why? You're right. You ask a question.
Maybe it's just his upper body strength.
That's a leading question. Just get to your point. You've got an opinion on things.
A little bit heavy?
I don't, but you're obviously... Okay. You're
the football man. You understand these things. Maybe it's just the television.
No, why can you never have an opinion?
I'm just asking.
No, you're not asking. It's a leading question, that, because you think that he's overweight. Just saying.
Liverpool 7, Spartak Moscow 0. It's 1-1 now between Maribor and Sevilla. So Liverpool and Sevilla going through from that group. Manchester City still 2-0 down away at Shakhtar Donetsk. Their unbeaten run coming to an end. 1-1 between Feyenoord and Napoli. So Shakhtar and City going through from Group F. In Group G, Porto leading Monaco 4-2. Leipzig still 1-0 down at home to Besiktas. Porto and Besiktas going through from that group. And in Group H, it's now Spurs 3, Apoel Nicosia 0. George Nkudu with the third goal. Did you see it?
No, I didn't actually. No, I'm just looking at Naby Keita there, Liverpool sign. He just equalised for Leipzig. So, yeah.
Real Madrid leading Borussia Dortmund 3-2. Real were 2-0 up. Aubameyang scored twice. The second of them, cheekiest little chip to draw them level. But Lucas Vazquez has just put Real back in front. What do you make of this Wolves thing?
Yeah, I
can understand.
In the back of your mind, is you just thinking trouble ahead, don't you? That's what you think. You know, as he's saying there, Ryan, he's saying that they're playing an unbelievable brand of football, which they are. You can clearly see that. Anyone who would have seen Wolves this season, excellent going forward. So many talented players you've got in the side, and it's a different brand of football that they're playing. So of course the supporters are happy, but I mentioned there about the conflict of interest. There's got to be something within that. You know, of course it's against the rules that an agent can be involved with a club, and then obviously the signings, but he's in an advisory role. That's how they're billing that. You just feel as though something down the line may come back, but said that you can't take away from the job that they're doing there at the moment, because they're actually playing great stuff.
Text in, thanks off the ball for covering Wolves tonight. It's a great story. Grown men like me following Wolves for 47 years are crying with joy over the beautiful football we're watching. Yeah, you can understand in a way why Wolves fans don't really care about the politics of the situation.
Well,
they've been down
about,
in League One. They're probably thinking, so we're going, listen, maybe there could be issues in the long term for the club surrounding this, surrounding ownership, and what if George Mendes decides, well, I'm going to move on somewhere else.
Yeah.
They're like, well, what's the worst that can happen? We were down in League One a couple of seasons ago. We have no prospects at all. And then this happened. We're going to enjoy it while it lasts.
It is a great point, isn't it? And I'm not being funny. So often we'll talk about the things that's happening around football clubs that you know, football clubs losing the soul and things like this. But ultimately, clubs of supporters want to see the clubs performing on the pitch, and if they're playing a great brand of football, they're of course happy. They're going to go and watch the side every week. Ultimately, that's what you want as a supporter. Really, we'll see what happens further down the line, but I think the way that they're playing this season, I think they'll go up.
The main story today was the news of Robbie Brady, confirmed by Burnley, that he's going to have to undergo knee surgery, facing a substantial period on the sidelines. He injured his left knee at the weekend. Sean Dyche confirming that he sustained damage to his patellar tendon, which is extremely painful and extremely serious. The patellar tendon is the structure that connects the kneecap to the shin bone.
Yeah.
And it sort of rips apart. So surgery, it's meant to be fairly straightforward, but can be sometimes quite difficult. You need to sew the tendons together
again.
Yeah,
it's the rehab, isn't it? That's the thing that'll be around it. He gutted for him, of course, because he has been playing very well this season. It's just, that's what happens, isn't it? That's the thing. You're always, a game away from something happening in your career. That's what ultimately, you know, when you're playing, that's what it's about. But it's just the timing of it as well for him. That's the thing, particularly the way that Burnley are playing this season. They're on the verge of doing something very special this season there at Burnley. So we just hope that he can recover soon enough and he comes back in full working order and ready to crack on again.
Yeah, he'll be 26 next month. We're probably talking about next August, just getting himself right for pre-season so he can take a full part in that. What do you do as a professional footballer when you find out you're going to be out for, even if you're going to be out for 2-3 months?
Yeah, I was really fortunate that I didn't have any serious sort of injury that was going to keep me out for a really sustained period until the end of my career with my back. And
Can he go off on holidays now for 2-3 weeks?
Well, probably not initially. He'll probably have to come back and do his initial rehab. Then he'll probably get a little bit of time off just to get away, you know, bit of sunshine for himself, whatever it will be. Certainly with a programme to do while he's away, though, as well, because rehab now, it's not like it probably was 20, 30 years ago where, you had that time out. You see lads that are doing cruciates now, they're back on bikes, they're back getting mobility, they're getting blood flowing through the injury. That's what he's trying to do. So that's what happens really now. City have just scored there. Sorry as well, Nath.
So Manchester City just pulled one back. They're still playing in that game. Liverpool Dove beaten Spartak Moscow by 7-0. I can't believe we took so long to get back to this. One before the break, Kev. If a drop ball is kicked directly into the opponent's goal, what happens? Do you A, allow the goal to stand, or B, disallow the goal and award a goal kick? You're the ref. Think about it during the break.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR. Watch 42 live Premier League games this season on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back. So Liverpool safely through to the last 16 of the Champions League. They are the first team ever to score seven twice in the group stage. A 7-0 win over Spartak Moscow at Anfield this evening. A hat-trick for Philippe Coutinho, two for Sadio Mane, one for Mo Salah and one for Roberto Firmino. The other game in that group finished 1-1 between Maribor and Sevilla. Sergio Aguero scored an injury time penalty, but Manchester City's unbeaten record comes to an end, beating 2-1 away at Shakhtar Donetsk. The two of them both qualify for the last 16. Feyenoord beat Napoli in the other game in Group F, but Napoli still go through to the Europa League. In Group G, Porto are through to the last 16, 5-2 winners over Monaco, while Besiktas won 2-1 away at Leipzig. And Spurs, they finished top of Group H, 3-0 winners over Apoel Nicosia. The goals tonight from Fernando Llorente, Heung-min Son and George Nkudu. Real Madrid 3-2 winners over Borussia Dortmund. Clinton Morrison is on the line. Evening, Clinton.
Good evening.
You were watching Liverpool's 7-0 demolition of Spartak Moscow. This front four for Liverpool, pretty tasty.
Yeah, very good. I wanted to flick over. Turn over after 3-0 because I knew it was all over. But I'm watching Tottenham back now. It was a thoroughly enjoyable performance. I think Liverpool, listen, Spartak Moscow weren't very good, but Liverpool made them look like that. I think they were on the front foot right from the beginning of the match. And in Coutinho, they've got a player that I could watch every minute of the day. He's that talented.
Yeah, Nathan touched on it early on, Clinton, just basically saying that Coutinho now, over the last month or so, is really starting to come into his own. So do you see him as being this key player for Liverpool now towards the end of the season? He's the one that they need to keep happy?
Yeah, him, definitely. There was all that talk about going to Barcelona, and you would have your head turned at a big club like that, Kev. But Liverpool have managed to keep hold of him. I think they'll keep hold of him. They'll need him for the rest of the season. I think him, along with Mo Salah, I think them two are the key players. I think Mo Salah's goals-to-games ratio since he signed for Liverpool has been first class. And if they've got four players up, the front four are a joy to watch. Everyone's different. They've got movement, you've got pace, you've got people that can score a goal. The goal that Coutinho scored where Mane plays it into Salah plays it to Firmino. And most strikers in that position, I know I would have been in that position, I would have gone for goal, but he squared it to Coutinho and he finishes it off. It was a joy to watch, and that's the football that Liverpool are playing at the moment.
That movement from the front four, we saw it again tonight, can be quite dizzying for defenders to try and deal with. When you watch that front four and the way they combine, does that look as though it's stuff that has been practiced on the training ground? Or is that Klopp looking at those four players' talents and saying, just go and do it. You have the freedom to go and do what you want.
I think they work on it on the training ground, but I think when you've got talent and natural ability, they just, tonight, it looked like four friends who get on really well playing football together and just passing to each other and then just saying, the other six or seven, just go defend and we'll go and win you the game. And I think that's how Klopp probably sets his, I don't say he sets his teams out like that, but if they can keep it so tight at the back, with them four going forward, I think they're the best going forward. I know Man City are really good going forward, but I think when Liverpool get it right, it could be just as good as Man City going forward.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Clint. I think he does work in it. You when you watch Liverpool in the warm-up pre-match, they do that sort of movement. He has they'll all line up in formation and he has them interchanging position. He has them doing all the sorts of movements that we saw for the goal tonight as well. So it's almost as if that is the constant, in your memory bank that's constantly worked at on the training ground, and they do it then to refresh themselves just pre-match.
So is that from the breakdown when you win the ball back on the halfway line and whoever, say, the deepest player is, if it's Coutinho, that the three in front, whoever's starting left, centre, right, they know exactly where they're going to go?
And it's stretching. Yeah. It's stretching though, Clinton, isn't it, as well? It's stretching.
Yeah,
your centre forward role, if you're playing with Firmino's play, it's not necessarily you're just stood. You say you'd have been the player that was excellent with his back to goal, but it's the movement. They want stretching the other ways. That's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right, Kev. What I like about Liverpool and Salah and Mane is they don't want to just hug the touchline. They come in off the touchline. So it's hard to mark. And you ask any defender, what they hate playing against is pace. And they've got bundles of it in Mane and Salah. So it's difficult. And I think that's why Salah's getting so much joy nowadays, because he's not just hugging the touchline. He's coming inside. And it's a nightmare to mark with. And then when you've got Coutinho, who drops deeper, who is a clever footballer, who can pick all the passes. And I think the relationship with Coutinho and Firmino is brilliant as well. And then the other two, Mane and Salah, are getting involved in it. It's a joy to watch. They've got players like Sturridge, who they can bring on, who made Mane's second goal. Got a lot of talented players there. Lallana to come back in that Liverpool squad. I just think defensively they struggle a bit down the left side with Moreno and Clavin. I just think that's a weak spot, and hopefully they can fix that in January.
Do you think that will ultimately be the downfall? Because the talent that they've got within the side perhaps suggests that they should be seriously challenging. So how can Jurgen Klopp get to the bottom of this problem that constantly comes up for them?
Well, I think in January, Kev, you go and get Virgil van Dijk. Whatever it costs, I think you go and pay as much as you can to get him. Because I think now it took him a bit of time, but now I think he's back to his best form playing that at Southampton. I think you go and get him. And they brought in Robertson, the left-back who I like from Hull. And I don't understand why he doesn't play. I've heard a rumour that he crosses too much. Well, you ask any striker, they love balls into the box. But I can understand probably why Klopp don't like that, because he's got so many talented players that want to keep coming to the ball and play football. So maybe it's going to take Robertson a bit of time. But I do believe Liverpool, if they can go and buy a quality centre-half and maybe a goalkeeper, because the goalkeeper situation is not the best, even though Meunier's the number one. He keeps changing, so you probably don't know whether you're coming or going as a goalkeeper.
So five English teams through to the last 16, four of them as group winners. It means that Chelsea have only three possible opponents in the last 16. Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, or Besiktas.
No, is it? Well, is it not Real Madrid?
No.
No, Besiktas, Barcelona and PSG.
Real Madrid are runners up.
Which shows
the task at hand for them.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I think Chelsea would have wanted to top that group, so it is going to be hard for them. And you don't fancy PSG, because I think PSG are the favourites to win it this year. I think they'll be there or thereabouts come when it gets to final day, because their front three is probably the best front three in the world at the moment. And I know we've got Messi and Suarez at Barcelona, but as a front three with Cavani, Neymar and Mbappe, they're a joy to watch. So I think you want to avoid the Besiktas. I'd say probably can't say that probably that well, but I'd probably say they're the team that you'd probably want to face. But they're still a good team. And I think when it gets to this stage of the knockout in the Champions League, any team's going to be difficult.
Do you think any of the English sides could win this season, Clinton, go and win it?
Yeah, but I honestly do think Man City have got a great chance. I just think the way Pep's got them playing and the way he's turned certain players at that club around, like Raheem Sterling, he got so much stick last season. He just looks like a reborn player with so much ability. He's getting more composed in front of goal. He's assisting. I think they could do it, but they struggle defensively. But their flaws, you don't really see it that much defensively, because they're outscoring teams and they're always on the ball and attacking. So I do believe City have got a great chance out of all the teams. But it's a credit to the English teams that everyone's qualified.
Mm. The way Liverpool have played at Anfield, are they now contenders for this? Just how devastating they are in attack. And when we talk about concentration, you would think on those big European nights that are to come in spring, the concentration shouldn't be an issue for them defensively, that actually they could go and cause a few upsets?
No, Liverpool definitely can go cause an upset. With that front four and the pace they've got, even going away from home, if they can keep it tight at the back, you always fancy them to get a goal away from home. And playing that European nights at Anfield, it's always a dread. It's always a dread to play, obviously, at Anfield. The crowd get up. As you said tonight, the atmosphere was electric. So with that front four, if they can keep them fit and everyone, and with Lana and other players to come back into the team, Liverpool have got a great shot. But I just think Man City at the moment, the way they're playing and the form they're in, they've got an unbelievable chance.
What about Tottenham, Glenn? You touched on them before. You wanted to switch over and have a look at them.
Yeah.
What do you think of them, the way that it has gone for them over the last month or so?
It's been a bit of a struggle. And can't really put. I can probably put my finger on it. I think Toby Alderweireld, I think he's been a massive loss for them at the back. And it goes to prove they're conceding some silly goals. And obviously, Dele Alli and Harry Kane have picked up slight injuries. And you can see recently, Dele Alli's form has dropped. But that was always going to happen as a young player. He burst onto the scene. And I think everyone thought he's just never going to have a bad month or a bad couple of months. It's always going to happen as a young player. And that's where I think other players or senior players have to have a word in his ear. Or the manager in Pochettino, who's a great manager, just to tell him, or maybe pull him out of the limelight and then put him back in after a couple of games. But I think Tottenham, yeah, I just think they're short in just a few places, Kevin. And that's where the struggle will be. I think they've got Harry Kane. If anything happens to Harry Kane, I know Llorente scored tonight, but he hasn't really set the world alight since he's gone to Tottenham.
Yeah, I think Pochettino said after that Real Madrid win at Wembley earlier on the Champions League that now Tottenham can be considered amongst Europeans elite. And it hasn't necessarily turned out that way in the last few months, has it? They've been going well in the Champions League, but the Premier League form has been a bit shaky. So do you think that a Tottenham could take on one of the big boys and seriously go and beat them when it comes down to the knockout stage? Not necessarily, I know they beat Real Madrid early on, but in the knockout stage in the next round?
Yeah, I do believe Tottenham could do it. And over a two-legged, I think they're really good. And I think Champions League football, they've adapted to it this season and been really good. I just think the problem for Tottenham is a lot of teams go to Wembley and be it like it is a final, because you instantly lift your game up playing at a stadium like that. And I think Tottenham have been struggling at home. But as I said, in the Champions League, they've been doing ever so well. So I do believe they can go far in the tournament. I don't think they can win it, but I do think they can go far and shock a few teams.
You mentioned Harry Kane there. It seems to be a golden era for strikers in the Premier League at the moment. And even with Liverpool, with that front three or four, none of whom might be your traditional number nine. As a forward player yourself and a man who like to get amongst it inside the penalty area, who's the one you look at the Premier League at the moment and think, yeah, he's a step above everyone else?
Tough one. It is a tough one. But I'm going to have to go for... See, I love Sergio Aguero, but I just think... I shouldn't say his time's coming to an end, because he's not coming to an end, because his goal to games record for Man City is frightening. But the one striker who's come on leaps and bounds is Harry Kane. I think he's like coming like the all-round centre-forward. I used to just look at him and think all he could do is score goals. But now he's strong. He bounces centre-halves off. He can run in behind. He creates maybe sometimes a bit too selfish. But I can't complain at that, because he's a striker and he wants to score goals. And 9 times out of 10... when he's in that position, he hits the target and it goes in the net. So I think at the moment, I think Harry Kane, probably up there, is probably the best striker in the Premier League at the moment.
What about Romelu Lukaku, Clinton? He's not been in the greatest of form, back amongst the goals again last night. What do you think of him? Do you put him amongst Europeans elite, or are you maybe of the opinion, like most, that he perhaps still needs to do more within his game?
I think he needs to do more. He can be careful. He's got all the attributes. He's big. He's strong. When you're big and that strong and the ball comes up to you, that's what he needs to improve on. If he's not scoring goals, then your other part of your game has to be good. And I think sometimes when it comes up to him, it can bounce off him too easy. And you ask, they hate playing against a big man. And he's got the lot. He's got pace. He's got strength. He can run in behind. But I just think sometimes when it comes up to him, he has to protect the ball a bit better. But he's definitely got the potential under Jose Mourinho to be one of the best in Europe. But his goals-to-games record at Man United, it has been good. And he'll always score you goals. But then when he's not scoring goals, people will comment on his overall play, because sometimes he's not in the game.
Good stuff, Clinton.
Good man.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so Liverpool 7-0 winners over Spartak Moscow. Spurs winning their game by 3-0 against Apoel. Manchester City beaten 2-1 by Shakhtar Donetsk. Let's take a quick break.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
I'll tell you, this new section of the show is getting rave reviews. You're the Ref might even return tomorrow evening.
Oh no, come on.
I have 5 more of them that I never even got to.
You never even got to the answer. You never even got to the answer of the other one that you gave me before.
I was giving people time. They wanted time to think about it.
Digest it.
Football people wanted time to think about this.
Yeah.
If a drop ball is kicked directly into the opponent's goal, what happens? Do you A, allow the goal to stand, or B, disallow the goal and award a goal kick?
Yeah, I did say the goal. I'd go with allow the goal.
Oof. And you a pundit, highly paid pundit. Imagine if that happened when you were doing live commentary on the BBC.
I know.
You'd be caught out.
Yeah.
You disallow the goal and award a goal kick.
Right.
That's if you kick it directly into the opponent's goal. My understanding is if you were to do a little solo, if it was a second touch,
yeah,
it's fine.
Right.
But just the first touch going directly into the opposition goal would be a goal kick.
Right.
Who knew?
No, that's it. That's fair play. The only one I would say as well, I do think, and it's something that comes, it might actually throw a referee, but do you know when there's an indirect free kick in the penalty area, you know, like maybe it's a pass back or whatever it would be.
Yeah.
I don't know why they move the ball and shift it before the strike. I don't know. When someone's lined up on the line, it's more or less bound to hit someone. Just smash it as hard as you can and look for a deflection into the goal.
You'd need someone there, though. Otherwise, they just all move out of the way.
Yeah, but they always are there, aren't they?
Yeah, true.
They always are there.
It's a great point, Kev.
Thanks,
great
mate.
Point.
Thank you.
Earlier on, we asked you to identify this person who couldn't believe, none of us could believe it, that Kenny Cunningham was talking about wearable sports tech on OTB AM this morning.
I mean, it was just a surreal experience for me to see something like that.
It's Rory McIlroy, and congratulations to Darren Kelly, who's won unlimited golf for a year at Palmerston House Estate. We'll give you another chance to win tomorrow night. For more details on their 2018 memberships, get onto palmerstonhouse.ie. Now, tomorrow morning on OTB AM, Alan Quinlan and Gordon Darcy will be in studio with Jer and Owen. That's OTB AM on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all of our digital channels from 7:45 AM. Tomorrow night, It's going to be a footballing spectacular. We'll have John Giles, a feature-length interview with Shay Given, talking about his book, Any Given Saturday, and he'll be signing copies of that book in the Four Masters bookshop in Donegal Town tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Oh, brilliant. Good Shay stuff, Given Seamus. These
things don't happen often.
Good stuff, Seamus.
Get yourself to Donegal Town.
I didn't even know the book was out.
Didn't even know you had a book. Whew. We'll have to read it before tomorrow night when we'll talk to Shay Given. Tom Dunn is up next. Good luck.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.